Alright, and welcome to the first section for Computer Science E259. So let me ask that your questions guide us for the most part. Lecture was meant to give you a taste of the project and where to begin. What I can offer in the absence of questions is more of a hand-holding through some of the code, just so that you know all the more so what to look at or where stuff is. But I think perhaps before that it might be useful for me to just take questions if you have any about the course, lecture, or the project. Yeah.
This is kind of detailing, but I was wondering about the significance of using underscores at the end of...
Oh, sure. So what we saw in some of tonight's code examples was a convention, if you will, for private class variables, in particular, using underscores after the character. It's simply a convention that some people use or don't use that is a useful visual indicator that this is a private class variable as opposed to a local variable. It has no meaning beyond convenience. Good question, though. Other questions? No? Just here for the code walkthrough? Okay. Well, please interject at any... Oh, that's not much better, is it? We just have a bad keyboard. All right. Well, please interject at any point with questions. Do you mind if they're able? Because this is just unusable. For those turning in at home who can't see what's happening, our keyboard and mouse are malfunctioning. All right.
I do have a question.
Yes.
Sorry. You had mentioned in the question areas for the project one about the white space. So in the examples in class, you were showing us to take into consideration the white space there. Is that in contrast to what you're asking
here? No, so the distinction with white space in the project is as follows. There's certain white space that you need to tolerate, for instance, at the start of a document. That kind of white space is not significant by definition. For instance, in example 3 that you saw, there was that single white space at the top of the file. It looks like we get terribly good reception there, but not anywhere else, unfortunately. So in that example, when you had a newline character outside the confines of the root element, that is by nature completely uninteresting because it's not even inside of the real content of the document. Where white space becomes more interesting is inside of a document, namely inside of the root element. And it's inside of the root element where white space can be either significant white space or ignorable white space.
Oh, I see. So
it's different types of white space.
Okay.
And again, I always try not to go down this road because at the end of the day, it's just white space, but it does raise some interesting questions like that.
Okay, so I'm trying to clarify that you're not completely expecting us to ignore all white space.
No, for the most part, in that, you need to be able to tolerate white space that's at the start of a document before you dive into the root element. After that, we prescribe that all white space should be considered significant. In other words, you don't throw it away.
Okay. So it's like you need to update the parser to recognize that, you know, even though there is a white space at the beginning of the document, process the rest of the code.
Correct, but and actually, perhaps the most useful thing to do is, why don't I, before we dive further into the source code, let me pull up the PDF, do a quick run-through of the types of things the problems are asking, so that we then have a context for looking at the source code as to what gets addressed where.
It just seems to be going a little slow. I reset it, but...
Well, that feels a little better than before, yeah.
Okay.
I think we can deal with this now, certainly.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Will do, thank you.
Yep.
All right, so what I'm going to do, again, for those of you tuning in at home, I'm going to pull up the course's website and simply pull up the PDF of Project 1. If you have a printout that... could be useful to mark up, otherwise you'll certainly see it on the screen in just a moment. Okay, I'll blow this up a little, and if you have trouble reading anything or hearing me, do just speak up. Okay, so, and please, at any point, interject if you have some question or you didn't follow something I said. Okay, so... once this thing starts responding to me again. All right. So, getting started. As you've probably seen and have probably done already, the first several questions of the project really are just preliminaries. You need to get an FAS account, you need to sign up for the course's listserv, and you need to configure your FAS account. If you haven't experience with Unix or command line utilities, we can help to some extent answer questions over email and so forth, but if there are certain basics, I would certainly point you toward the direction of just a colleague or a friend who might have a bit more savvy. We don't expect that you'll be doing anything complicated at the command line, but frankly, a 20-minute session with a friend, if you've never used a DOS window or a Unix window before, is sufficient to just get you acclimated to the environment that you'll need to type a few commands on. So with that said, that takes us to roughly question 6.
So in 6, you expect us to first create some document based on this information, and then run the parser to get the SAS events?
Nope. Any of these questions, especially in that they're quickies, are meant to be done in the absence of code. So
okay.
This question here, for instance, asks you to consider this XML fragment and then give us the pseudocode for the SAS events that would be fired. You really should be able to do that after tonight's lecture or reflection on tonight's lecture off the top of your head, just by reading that XML top to bottom. Right? The first one, is obviously going to be the start document event, then a start element event, and then it becomes a little more interesting after that. But that's all. So you could write code. You could run the SAX demo, frankly, on this, and you could, but I would say that's not terribly useful for you, the presumed learner. So I would do it off the top of your head. Number 7 asks you to sketch a DOM, which will make more sense next week. So typically, though, we can typically generalize and say you can do the first half or third of the project starting now. You'll certainly have to interject your own intellect as to whether or not you should know how to do a certain problem based on what you've heard in the most recent lecture. And clearly here, this is something that will come up for next week. 8 will similarly be best addressed next week because it asks you to contrast some of the upsides and downsides of, say, SAX versus DOM, and that will make sense once we've actually seen DOM. Seems to respond to every other keystroke. All right, so 9 takes the reverse of one of the earlier questions, and it shows you a list of SAX events and just asks a list of SAX events as depicted by pseudocode and asks you to come up with the XML that is implied by them. Again, these are just warm-up exercises that should be useful the first time around, and if you start doing lots of problems like this, you'll very quickly, I think, find them mundane. They're just meant to reinforce some of the basic ideas early on before you get to the juicy stuff. So 10 sort of ramps things up slightly and asks you to give a grammar for meta language, that is an XML-type language that supports elements whose names must be entirely alphabetical, dot, dot, dot. So essentially, it defines a fairly simplified form of XML, very similar to what we've already looked at in class and what you'll do with Project 1 itself, and just asks you to come up with the grammar for that. And again, that just reinforces our discussion of grammars and just acclimates you a bit more to the syntax. And it's in problem 11 that you really begin to dive into the guts of the project and the source code. So in problem 11, it explains, first and foremost, the grammar that we introduced tonight in Lecture 2, and it notes specifically that this parser, per tonight, did not support attributes or empty elements. Now, granted, we didn't run tonight's parser, but simply that visual analysis of the code when we were looking at read start tag, it was obvious that that thing was only capable of reading the names of tags and the open bracket, close bracket, but there was no mention or hint of support for attributes. So clearly, that parser had limits, quote unquote. And this problem in number 11 is about, one, it walks you through the code somewhat, tells you where to start, tells you what commands you can type to automate certain processes, like the building of code and the running of the tester. It uses ant, per tonight's discussion. And then what it asks you to do is to, quote-unquote, eliminate this limitation, the parser's expectation that its input file's first character will demark the start of an element. That is to say, if you think back to class when we showed you 2.xml, which was just foobarbaz, and 3.xml, which was the same thing, but I had hit enter on the very first line to insert a line break, that file, 3.xml, breaks the parser out of the box. Simply because, as you saw in the code, it makes this incredibly naive assumption that the first character, first line of the file, is going to be open bracket. And that's clearly a misplaced assumption. So we ramp up easily initially, and we just say, fix this. This is a bug. that white space has got to be tolerated. Decide how you want to fix our parser so that it tolerates that white space. And among the things that should be coming to mind, if this isn't already sort of starting to gel in your mind, it's probably some kind of loop that iterates over all white space characters up until the point of reading the start tag. All right. And again, appreciate the relative simplicity of the parser, and that what we're getting at is the concepts and at implementation of some of the ideas, and simply iterating naively over a sequence of characters looking for the start tag isn't necessarily the only way to do it, but it's certainly consistent with how the rest of the parser is implemented. So that's 11. 12 is a debriefing. It just asks you in a sentence or two to just tell us, you know, how, what you did conceptually to make your code more clear. 13 asks you to tackle a different shortcoming, the lack of attributes. So long story short, we give you a modified grammar, and there's a new line here, line 4 of the grammar for problem 13, clearly defines what it means to be an attribute, and we further define later on the next page what it means to be an attribute value. So in short, we augment the grammar, we're building upon previous work, and we say, go implement support for attributes. There, too, is probably going to be something like a couple of loops, one of which reads in your attribute's name, waits for an equal sign. Once it finds it, tolerates white space to the left and right of the equal sign, again with some loop, presumably. And then reading the attribute's value is probably going to be some loop up until the point of reaching a quote, a double quote. And again, here, too, go back to the grammar. Whenever in doubt as to what to do, all of the answers are in the grammar or in the sentences around that explain exactly what each of these non-terminals is. So for instance, notice, do we support single or double quotes or both? It's just double quotes. And it's slightly confusing here because we use single quotes in the grammar to demonstrate what's a terminal, that is a literal, but just realize implied there is just the use of double quotes. Even though, again, XML lets you use double or single, we're not implementing an XML parser, we're implementing a simplified XML parser. If you want to implement more, that's fine, but just what we're looking for is implementation of the spec. Okay, let me pause. Any questions that have come up? Okay, 14, debriefing, just tell us about your implementation. 15 asks you to build a DOM. So it's 15 where you can flag it if you want, that will be perhaps better addressed after next week's lecture. Similarly for 16, 17 is tackleable after tonight. 17 asks you to allow for elements like open bracket, br, slash, close bracket. Currently, the parser does not allow for those, but they should be acceptable for a parser, even a pretty simplified parser. So we just ask you in this two or three sentence directive, you go make that work. And there too, just intuitively, what method, based on what you saw tonight, should you probably focus your attention there? Yeah, so read start element, though, in turn calls read start tag. So it's probably in read start tag that you would do this. And you can rename the methods if you want, right? Because there you're starting to blur the distinction between a start tag and an end tag. So maybe you want to come up with a bigger method called read tag that itself might call read start tag or read end tag. Up to you. Design decision. But once you've finished reading one of these so-called empty elements, what SAX events had you better fire off? But let's do it in the right order. Start element and immediately end element, just like we saw in our little demo tonight. So it's going to be up to you to call both of them in that case. And that makes sense because you're the parser. It's your job to do the callbacks. Okay. Number 18, just a sentence or two of debriefing. 19 is just a cute reminder that you better test your code on more files than the ones we've provided you with, just because clearly our test cases are probably not exhaustive, they're just representative. 20 asks you to update the Java doc, and this too, again, your own Java doc can be your friend too, especially for a project like this, especially if you're not used to working with a dozen or more files with Java. Look to the Java doc, even your own Java doc, to figure out what file was that, what class is that. Use your own Java doc. And that program you ran at the very start of the project called CSCIE 259 Web, all that does per the project is it creates a directory in your public HTML directory on FAS that allows you to generate the Java doc in a way that's publicly accessible on the web. So those of you who are going to develop on nice.fas, don't have to copy down the HTML generated via SFTP to your local machine and then view it locally, which is just a pain, if nothing else. Those of you developing on your PCs or Macs or Linux boxes, it's irrelevant, that command, because you're clearly going to have direct access to your files on your local machine anyway. And when you run ant javadoc, as this indicates, it just dumps into that docs directory that I pointed out tonight all of the updated HTML for your own javadoc. Okay? 21 tries to be a little cute, a little stress reliever. It's in 22 that you very rapidly put down your own parser and pick up a real parser. So the first part of this project is really about taking the hood off of an XML parser and really getting you a sense of the inner workings, an appreciation for some of the matters at hand, and generally a sense of what it means to use XML in the first place. Because as you consider how to implement a parser, you're sort of implicitly required to consider some efficiency concerns and just get an appreciation of what it really means to use XML. It means to read these things character by character using a bit of look ahead, and that may or very well have implications in software you want to use XML in, performance and so forth. So that's one of the goals there. In this problem 22, we ask you to put aside that parser that you just spent all that time on, never again to use it, and begin using what's called Xerces. So again, JAXP is the Java API for all things XML, though it doesn't stand for just that. The JDK from Sun ships with an implementation of JAXP. That is, JAXP is a subset of the J2EE code base these days. The implementation that Sun chose to use was the people from Apaches. So they took Xerces 2.something off the shelf, they downloaded it, they zipped it up in their own distribution of the JDK, and they gave it to you. Unfortunately, it's a little outdated now. And even though what parser you're using is immaterial to your code, it is material to, for instance, your platform or the performance thereof. Xerces tends to be sort of the parser to use. One, it's free. Two, it's perpetually being improved. And three, it just works well, and it does implement the spec correctly. A lot of the XML tools out there will similarly ship with XML parsers that could be just as good, if not better. I would say, though, that Xerces is one of the most portable and frequently used because, again, it's free, it's off the shelf, and the other reasons as well. Saxon is another one. Saxon is implemented by Michael Kay, the gentleman who writes the very big book that I suggested of all the books you might want to consider when we get to the XSLT part of the course. There are several others out there. XML Spy comes with its own. Stylus will come with its own. We'll see more as time progresses. But what we ask you to do in this project is to override the version of Xerces that ships with the JDK simply so that you have something newer and less buggy, is the short of it. And we'll do that for other packages as well in the future.
Oxygen, using which one? Oxygen.
So I've never used Oxygen myself. And does it have a parser in it? Or
I think so.
It does? And it's an XML editor for sure. If it has a parser, I don't know if it's its own or something off the shelf. So 22 asks you to use Xerces. As an aside, the newest version of Xerces is 2.9.0. Xalen, which is the XSLT processor we'll start using in a couple of weeks, has only been tested officially by Apache with this slightly older version of Xerces, 2.7.1. So we're going to go with that one just so that we don't create a headache for ourselves when it comes to Xalen. So the effect for our purposes is probably immaterial, but just realize the distinction. What you do in quote-unquote my second XML parser, problem 22, is to write a program literally using a real XML parser that takes an input document like that at the top of page 11 and converts any and all attributes to a document where all attributes have been converted to child elements. So it's a reasonable task in that sort of a plausible, quick and dirty program that you might need to write to convert your XML to some other format. We'll actually come back to this in XSLT because you can do this much more easily and quickly in XSLT, even though the Java version is not that hard. But what it does is acclimate you to the actual Xerces API, which we will come back to over time. And what it allows you to do is to transition yourself from sort of the sandbox that is our simplified XML parser and just take those training wheels off and put you in front of the real API so that henceforth you have some savvy with it. And this will ask you effectively to implement yourself a SAX event handler that upon receipt of a start element event is going to read those attributes by iterating over them and probably by outputting elements instead of the attributes themselves. So in that regard, it's going to be similar in somewhat similar in structure to our SACS demo from tonight. So you even have some of the groundwork for that already. 23 is a sort of extra credit for no credit on white space, but for the curious and for those who are just interested to learn more, that's somewhat tendential. It's more of a discussion and tutorial on white space and gives you some tasks to keep you busy if of interest. And finally, number 25, it walks you through the process of submitting your code and executing it on NICE. You are more than welcome. You're encouraged to do this development on your own machines. In theory, it should be equivalent to doing it on anyone else's machine in the class. In reality, there are still issues, even with Java, like new line characters and carriage returns and stupid issues like that that might compel different behavior on different platforms. But in theory, everything should work fine. But we do expect, for the sake of conformity, or rather uniformity and simplicity, that everything be compiled, executed, and submitted on NICE, where it should work. But this is the warning is, don't upload your code 20 minutes before the deadline, test it, realize it's not working, and then try to deal with it then. Right? Do it a few days earlier just to make sure it's going to work, and then make sure you leave time for just that last minute debugging. Okay. So that's the verbal overview. Any questions? No? Code? All right. So again, please direct me if you have preference for what to look at, but what I'll dive in by default to is the MF directory again. The file we spent time on tonight in lecture was XML parser. We didn't look at all of it, but I would say that perhaps our time is better spent looking at some of the other files now, because we really just skipped end element, I think, and characters, which read start tag and read element were perhaps the most interesting and juiciest in there. So with that said, let's just take a look at tester, because I did allude to that a few times. So tester.java is just sort of a utility class that has a main routine. Again, I don't have comments on the screen, but you do. The first couple lines are uninteresting. It just checks the usage. Then the switch statement is just what runs the tests. And as you'll see in the project spec, this tester program is purely for your convenience. It lets you test one of two cases. One, it lets you test your SACS code. Two, or SACS-related code. And two, it lets you test your DOM code. So the first case is relevant tonight. Case one, if executed via the syntax prescribed in the spec, simply does what? It instantiates one of our XML parsers. Again, for simplicity, we are not using the factory interface because it just adds unnecessary distractions so far as we're concerned. We do this buffered writer thing, which simply allows us to effectively write the output out to a file, and I'll explain what this does in a moment. We instantiate what's called an XML serializer, which literally is a program that takes SACS events and prints them back out as actual XML. So whereas SACS demo tonight was a content handler that printed pseudocode for SACS events, this XML serializer, by definition and by convention, takes SACS events and prints the corresponding XML, not pseudocode thereof. So what test case one does, and it's sort of almost a funny test program, is it takes an input document, runs your parser on it, which in turn had better fire SACS events. This XML serializer takes those SACS events and writes out XML, so that it's a zero-sum game, ideally. You should be taking an input document, or this program will take an input document, run it through your parser, create the output document, and if they're not identical, then there's a bug in your code. And that's why it's a useful test, because it allows you to test before and after. So if you're losing information, if it's coming out differently, something's wrong with the parser or with the serializer. With that said, the last line of code, and the most interesting one of all, really, is this parse line, because it passes to the parse method of your XML parser, which we began our discussion with tonight, the file name called argv0, and then s1, which is just our serializer reference. So as is the habit, I think, is useful to get into with this course's projects, where to turn next? Well, the interesting thing we've just seen, we've seen XML parser. We just mentioned XML serializer. Well, let's glance at that. All right, again, through a sort of visual debugging of the code. So notice that XML serializer is a instance of, is a implementation of what interface? And specifically, it's a content handler. And it's a quick and dirty one because we extend default handler and just implement the stuff we care about. So this XML serializer, let's ignore the private data members for a moment, has a constructor which does some stuff that I'll wave my hands at right now as unenlightening. But let's scroll down to the start element handler. So start element takes, as you would expect, a name and a list of attributes, because it implements, again, the content handler interface, our simplified version we've been talking about. Oh, and incidentally, I should pause for a moment and go back and show you that just as the Java doc for the JAXP API is useful, and that's what we looked at tonight, more than your Java doc being a useful reference for what you've been implementing, it is also really your view of our simplified XML API. So I've just gone into the distribution code. I've pulled up the Java doc that we gave you by default. If I want to see what E259 simplified content handler looks like, well, the answer is in your Java doc. So earlier tonight you saw a dozen or so methods with more complicated signatures than these. Well, this is sort of my simplification of the content handler interface. Fewer arguments, fewer parameters, fewer methods, but they allow us to focus on the topics we've been exploring. So what is this XML serializer implementing, really? It's implementing this simplified five-method interface called content handler. And just to keep them clear, yes, it's called the same content handler, but notice it's in the csei259.project1.mf package. So don't get them confused. And usually another clue is if it looks simple, it's probably ours. If it's more convoluted, it's the real one. So another trick. So in XML serializer, we implement content handler start element routine. Let's ignore the pretty printing for now. All that does is help me indent things nicely in the serializer. Notice that the first thing start element does, as you might expect, is to write out an open bracket. Because why? Well, think about it. This is a content handler that we've implemented for you mostly. We don't support attributes either yet. But for the most part, this thing works. And what it does upon receipt of a start element SAX event, well, what has it got to do? It's just been handed the name and the list of attributes, though the latter is not yet true. What does it need to do to serialize the XML? Well, to serialize means to flatten it as a string of characters, as like in a file. So it's going to print, obviously, the open bracket, the name it's been passed, called name here, in line 160, 170, then it's going to write the close bracket. And again, the stuff I waved my hands at before, it doesn't just call system.out.println, it instead writes to this buffer so that it goes to the destination it's intended. But just look to the code for what that means. But just calling the write, which is like the print line method. Okay, what does it do next? Well, scroll down. It's just checking for some pretty printing. So again, read through this. This is not terribly enlightening. This pretty print flag and this use of new lines and indent levels, that's simply to make things prettier and to indent things hierarchically. It is tangential to the SAX API itself. It's purely an aesthetic decision in our serializer. So scrolling back, this again is our start element method, that is event handler. Leading question, in what method are you going to focus your attention when asked to implement support in XML serializer for attributes? This guy, right? Start element. Right? Presumably right around line 170, 171, there'd better be some code that starts iterating over your list of attributes that you were handed, prints them each out as attribute equals quote-unquote value, space, attribute equals quote-unquote value, space. Writing the serializer is pretty easy. Right? You really don't have to think much about it, except if you want to be really anal and make sure you don't have like a superfluous white space character before the end of your close bracket. That's a simple two-line if condition. So the serializer is pretty straightforward. But this does beg the question, continuing our sort of mental recursion here, well, what's an attributes object? Because this guy, start element, is being passed not only a string for the name, but some kind of attributes object, which I higher level said was a linked list, an array, something. Well, what is it? Well, notice in our Java doc, the attributes class in our MF package If you scroll down, is, as we say in the comments, a simplified version of org.xml.sax.helpers.attributesimple. So what I've tried to do in all of the comments too is so that you have points of comparison, is always push you toward the real implementation so that you can see the parallels here and that we're not operating in a vacuum. Notice that the attributes class has a method called addAttribute, getLength, getName, and getValue. So another leading question, which of these methods, if any, is your serializer implementation probably going to use? Exactly, the last three, right? You need to know how many attributes there are, and you need to get each's name and value for some given index. Meanwhile, who is presumably going to use add attributes? Sorry?
XML parser.
The XML parser, exactly. So that's the other side of the equation. When you're actually parsing the attributes and building up this object called attributes for delivery to the content handler, which in this case might be XML serializer, you're going to have to add attributes to that collection. So this is sort of like a container class in Java, but it's SAC specific, and it's a simplified version of the one that SAC does in fact use. So finally, just to wrap this up without dwelling on wrap up this file without dwelling too much on its details, as you might guess, characters. So characters, again, not, it's sort of really simple in that we are going to receive the content, which is in the form of a string. We're going to check for this pretty printing stuff, which I'll leave to you, the reader, to figure out what it's doing exactly. And then it just writes out the content. And it does it using this write method. So content, and you can look up the parameters, zero, content length. It just informs the method what to print and where. So let's take a look at the net effect of these files alone. So I'm going to go back in the tree. All of these ant commands are designed to work in the same directory that build.xml is. I already earlier, recall, typed ant, which built the file. So notice, this is what's useful about ant. It didn't just rebuild all the files because nothing's changed. And per the spec, you can run ant... what's it called? Tester? Oops. Don't remember our own target. Compile tester. Oh, I guess we don't have a directive for this. So what you would type per the spec is java.cci259.project1.mf. Oh, thank you. Keyboard's dropping characters still. CIE1 project.tester. Notice we have usage there, so I just hit enter. It tells me to type the file name followed by test number. We had a bunch of files in the samples directory. To refresh your memory, in samples XML1 is this very trivial file. So what tester1 is going to do, recall, it's going to instantiate your parser, it's going to instantiate a serializer, it's going to pass the latter to the former, and the net result hopefully should be we should get out precisely what we put in. So let's try that. So, tester, file name is samples XML1, test case 1, enter, and it did come right out. It's a little messy because we didn't output a new line because we didn't need to. That kind of white space, recall, was ignorable per earlier, so that's okay. Recall that sample number 2 looks like this, so a little more interesting, a better test case perhaps. So let's run it on that one, 2.xml, test case 1. And that one seemed to come out okay too.
What is the test case?
So tester has a switch statement that asks for test case 1 or 2.
That's right.
That's all.
SAX versus
not. It's just we've kept the code in one place. So let's look at a more interesting one and see where the thing finally breaks and requires your attention. Start doing more verbal demos, I think. Samples XML3. So this too, pretty simple, but it's got that new line character up top, which per the spec is not yet supported, which means presumably my code is going to throw a fatal exception, it's going to call the fatal exception handler, which currently we said does nothing. So let's run that test case, which is 3.xml, test case 1, and indeed it did nothing. That's a bad sign. Now, if I go in here, for the sake of discussion, let's go into source, MF, and error handler. Come on. And again, notice, let's see, fatal exception, fatal error. Oops. Notice in default handler, this guy, recall, implements both content handler and error handler. So the only method in error handler we set is fatal error, and notice it does nothing. But it does receive an exception. So essentially my code, just as yours should do, if you encounter some kind of parsing error, will throw an exception that's appropriate, even if it's a generic exception object, maybe passing in a useful explanatory message, and then this guy will receive it, and for especially for debugging purposes, well, this method can be made to be more useful. I'm going to actually implement this and not just leave it with a two-character implementation. And I'm actually going to say system.error. Okay. Ironic for error. Okay. Dot print. Okay, print line. So let's go ahead and print out, let's say, error space, and then I'm going to print out exception.get message. And get message, if you're not familiar, is one of the useful methods that comes with every Java exception object. So we'll see if it's useful in this case. So I'm going to go ahead and now save default handler. I'm just going to type ant. Ant's going to figure out what I changed and recompile that one file. And now I'm going to go back up and re-execute my test case one on 3.xml. And what I should now see is error, space, and then the message. So where did this come from? Expecting start of element. Well, that begs the question, all right, where is it from? Well, let's use grep and say expecting start. What file is that in? Oh, I must have misspelled it wrong. That looks okay. Expecting. There we go. So we could have guessed this, right? It comes from XML parser because that's the thing doing the parsing. Well, where is that? It looks like it's around maybe line 113 in this case, or the other one. So line 113, that looks about right. So in read element, on line 113 is a call to fatal error with a runtime exception with a useful explanatory message saying error, expecting start of element. Why? Because what we encountered is not a start tag. So it's probably in there that you need, again, to implement some support for some leading, uninteresting white space so that that does not get invoked. All right, so finally, many of the other files are related not to the SAX part of the code project, but to the DOM. So ATTER is DOM, document is DOM, DOM builder, DOM walker, obviously DOM, element is DOM, node is DOM, text is DOM. So we've pretty much now looked at all of the files or Java doc for the SAX ones, which just to be clear are attributes, content handler and default handler, error handler, tester, an XML parser, and XML serializer. And I think the best way to approach the project is, one, certainly just do another overview for yourself so that you sort of know mentally what you need to bite off over the next couple of weeks, but you can pretty much work through it serially, number 1 through number 20-something, and just skip the ones that are clearly related to DOM for now. And I think the best position you could put yourself in is for this week, it was encouraged that you get your FAST account set up and all of the logistical stuff. By next week's class, you would be in excellent shape if you've completed all of the SACS-related parts of the project. And you can really then hit the ground running with the DOM part, which I would say is it's probably, dare say, a little less work than this one because you'll have acclimated to the code. And just to give you a teaser, what the DOM part of the project asks you to do is implement another content handler, but this one, rather than serializing it, right, the one you're writing or modifying here is serializer, rather than just serialize the XML out, you're rather going to build a DOM in memory. So next week's going to be about receiving all of these SACS events and then instantiating Java object after Java object, connecting them with references, pointers, so that in memory at the end of that execution, you have a DOM that is a tree representation of an XML document. And then we'll use your serializer again, pass your DOM to a serializer, this time called DOM Walker, that will then output your DOM as XML. So next week, you're going to take XML, go to a DOM, go to a serializer, and if they don't look the same, now you've got bugs in your DOM. but it's meant to be very circular, the project. So, any questions? I think it's fun, to be honest. And I think it's most fun, though, if you do not leave it for the last night or two. I think do yourself that favor and plan ahead. All right, so let's officially adjourn here, and I'll stick around if you have more personal or one-on-one questions.